I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
And you're here. Thanks for choosing the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Your quest for podcasts of the paranormal, supernatural, and the unexplained ends here. We invite you to enjoy all our shows we have on this network. And right now, let's start with Strange Things with Joshua P. Warren.
Welcome to our podcast. Please be aware the thoughts and opinions expressed by the host are their thoughts and opinions only and do not reflect those of iHeartMedia, iHeartRadio, Coast to Coast AM, employees of Premier Networks, or their sponsors and associates. We would like to encourage you to do your own research and discover the subject matter for yourself.
Strange Things with Joshua P. Warren.
I am Joshua P. Warren, and each week on this show, I'll be bringing you brand new, mind-blowing content, news, exercises, and weird experiments you can do at home, and a lot more. On this edition of the show, is DNA actually AI code? Right now, I am holding in my hands a plastic model of a strand of DNA. It's about 5 feet tall. This was 3D printed. I've had this for about a year, and it's kind of mesmerizing to hold it in your hands and think about what it represents. It's so organized. It looks like something that was machined. You know, we're talking about pretty much taking a ladder and twisting it. So you get that, that double helix as they talk about. And I look at it and I wonder, what is it about this design that is so integral to life? I mean, it kind of seems like an antenna for life, this thing I'm holding in my hands. DNA, my goodness, it's the key to understanding everything about being a human. Deoxyribonucleic acid, a molecule that contains the genetic code that is unique to every individual. Think of this code as an instruction manual for making all the proteins that form our bodies and help them thrive. The information coded in DNA is hereditary, meaning that it passes from parent to child. You hear about DNA all the time, but, you know, we know how to work with it,
But do we really understand what it is? Well, recently, Mobius sent me an article that I decided to bring up here. It's from The Pulse. Let's see, what is this called here? The Pulse. I guess it's thepulse.one. It's some kind of a website here. And there's an article written by a man named Tom Bunzel. And he says, what if DNA code is artificial intelligence? We are an expression of an immense mystery which we cannot objectify because we are the subject and not any object. Okay. So here's what he's talking about. Okay. I'm just going to read you a little excerpt. He says, years ago, I had what I thought was an epiphany after watching a video on TED. I guess he's talking about, you know, TED Talks. And he says, in the video, a futurist named Juan Enriquez compares the sequence of letters comprising the biochemicals of DNA with the code on a floppy disk. Enrique holds up this floppy disk and says, quote, because this thing codes ones and zeros, and this other thing, talking about DNA, codes A, T, C, Gs, and it just sits up there absorbing energy. One fine day, it has enough energy to say execute, and it goes thump. And when it does that, it creates an executable file. And he goes on to say that basically, you know, in the same way, more or less, that we use zeros and ones on floppy disks, you have like a code AATCAGGGACCC, which is just a code that might make a flower that's white, that blooms in the spring and smells like this. All right. So basically what this guy is saying is that, yes, we can all have theories and ideas and philosophies about how the world works, but in reality, computers are a pretty good model, a pretty good reflection of what it's like to, process information. And it seems like that humans may just be a type of computer. And that instead of zeros and ones, we have these other variables here, which we express with the A's and the G's and the T's. He says, in this scenario, one thing is clear. The concept of artificial is now meaningless. Using the word artificial separates us from nature as having created a completely human intelligence when we are neither separate from nature, nor is AI truly intelligent. He makes a very important point here, and this is something that I have struggled to talk about over the years, especially when it comes to the UFO phenomenon. I have speculated that a lot of these UFOs, like the one, for example, that was flying around Puerto Rico, that you can see if you go to YouTube and watch my video report called OUFOs. I get the feeling that they blur the line between like a biological organism and what we think of as a machine. And you really have to start thinking also about like, okay, if we're going to try to break this down and say like, okay, what's the difference between you and let's say C-3PO in Star Wars. We look at C-3PO, we say, well, that's just a robot. And this robot can't have real feelings. He may think he has feelings because he's been programmed to think he can think he has feelings, but he doesn't really. He's just made of metal. And yet, as I've said before, well, what are humans made of? You know, in your body, you've got iron and lead and mercury and titanium and copper and chromium and nickel. You even have gold in your body. So are you really that much different than C-3PO or some other kind of an android? You know, this is a question that people like the science fiction author Philip K. Dick explored in a lot of his work. But, okay, let's just say, all right, if we're going to talk about intelligence, what exactly is intelligence? All right, the definition of intelligence is, Simply enough, from what I can see here on the almighty internet, intelligence is the ability to perceive or infer information and to retain it. So infer means you pick up on certain things and draw a conclusion. A lot of people get confused about inferring and implying. Implying means that you're sort of insinuating something, and inferring means that you're taking things that are maybe circumstantial and drawing a conclusion. I'm putting that in my own words. Okay, so intelligence is the ability to perceive or infer information and to retain it, according to, let's see, this is Wikipedia. All right, fine. So what is artificial intelligence exactly? Everybody talks about it all the time now. AI is the intelligence of machines or software, as opposed to the intelligence of living beings, primarily of humans. It is a field of study in computer science that develops and studies intelligent machines. And then here's what's also kind of interesting. When you start reading more about, you know, how AI is supposed to work. Okay. These scientists who, for decades have been creating these computer programs say that it's based on breaking down subjects by logic. Okay. Says, for example, early researchers developed algorithms that imitated step-by-step reasoning that humans use when they solve puzzles or make logical deductions. So we're talking about, you know, like Sherlock Holmes stuff. So you have all these variables here, and you're looking around, and you're kind of using the scientific method. You're looking for cause and effect, and you're trying to see what circumstance may lead to another circumstance. This is logical deduction, the progression of logical deduction. But here's the spooky thing about it. If we start handing over all of these logical deductions and decision-making abilities to these computers, which is happening at lightning speed, well, is it logical for you and me to even be alive? I mean, I'm not trying to depress you here, but think about this. If the great AI machine says to you, well, why do you need to be here? You might say, oh, well, I need to be here because that, I'm a really good person and, I have to raise my children. And then the robot goes, well, why do your children need to be here? Right. is it logical for us to be here? Because if it's not, maybe the AI is going to determine that, yeah, we humans don't need to exist anymore. When we come back, I'm going to dig into that, and also something really interesting along the lines of cyborg technology, because we're all really just kind of cyborgs. You know what? If you enjoy this podcast, I bet you will enjoy the audiobook that I read. It just came out, just a month or so ago. Amazing Happy Endings, True Stories to Make You Smile. I ask listeners to send me stories from all over, and they have to be short, and they have to be true. They've got to be amazing, and they have to have a happy ending. If you would like to listen to that audiobook, I think you can even listen to it for free if you sign up for an Audible account or whatever, but it doesn't matter. Just go to AmazingHappyEndings.com, and you'll find the Kindle there, the paperback, hardback, the audiobook. And if you go to JoshuaPWarren.com, that is where you can sign up for my free e-newsletter and stay updated on some of the exciting new projects that I only talk about through the newsletter. You won't hear it on the podcast. You got to sign up for my newsletter at JoshuaPWarren.com. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you are listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network, and I will be right back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/strangethings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/strangethings.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. I am your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, beaming into your wormhole brain from my studio in Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada, where every day is golden and every night is silver. Agitato Zume! And surely you've seen that show called Paranormal Caught on Camera on the Travel Channel. I'm sure nowadays it's probably distributed all over the place as well in other areas. But last year, I went into my backyard here at my house in Vegas, and I took a high-speed camera, and I just pointed it at the sky over my house, and I shot a bunch of video clips. And we're talking about 1,000 frames per second. So whatever you film is slowed down immediately, like immensely. A lot of things that are moving too fast for your naked eye to see, you can see when you watch the high speed footage. And I captured a couple of UFOs, potentially three UFOs over my house that were only visible because of the high speed camera. And if you go to my YouTube channel, Just go to YouTube and just look up Joshua P. Warren. You can see this footage. And the great paranormal investigator Brian Kano contacted me. He does a lot of work with Paranormal Caught on Camera and said that he thought that was some really good footage. And anyway, long story short, it's going to be on the show. It's going to be on the TV show at some point. I don't know when, but I'll keep you updated. So thank you, Brian. And that's really cool, because I think more people should start doing that. Take high speed cameras out and film the sky. There's no telling what's up there all the time. It's just moving too fast for the naked eyes to see. All right, let's get back to logic. Logic. You know, I like that show, speaking of TV, I like that show Homicide Hunter with Detective Joe Kenda. You ever watch that one? And, you know, he has this amazing track record of solving crimes. And, I was watching some documentary with him the other day, and he's like, 2 + 2 = 4, you know. And you know what? In this world, if you're a regular human being and you're living a practical life, that's true. 2 + 2 = 4. If you're a quantum physicist, I don't know. Maybe 2 + 2 = elephant or something. I'm not sure, but. Also, before I get to my ultimate point here, he said something that I thought was kind of intriguing. I was watching Joe Kenda talk about this serial killer that he was tracking down. I think he said it was the only time he'd ever come into contact with a serial killer in his whole career. That's how rare a serial killer is. And he said there's this misconception out there promoted by the media that serial killers have this routine that they like, and they just repeat it. That if you figure out the routine, then you can sort of predict what the next step is going to be, and who's the type of person who would do this. He said that that is actually not at all the case. That serial killers, they can do all kinds of erratic, unexpected, spontaneous, unpredictable things, and they don't always just repeat the same process over and over again. But regardless, detectives use that kind of logic called deductive reasoning, right? Where you have a set of circumstances there in front of you, and you can use Venn diagrams if you like. You know, if A plus B equals C, then C plus B equals, you know, whatever. I'm not going to sit here and like give you some logic lesson. If then that, it's math and language, logic. But if we are teaching these systems that control everything, including, you know, weapons, energy grids, security systems, your bank account, if we're teaching them some form of logic, well, for one thing, that's the bad news. People are the ones who are creating this. So how logical is the average person that you know these days? Okay. That's kind of scary, just to think that humans are creating the sense of logic there. But furthermore, okay, let's say it's done precisely according to the book. Let's say it's like Spock logic. All right, fine. We create all this AI. We put it in charge of everything. And then the AI is strictly logical and says, why do we need humans? There are all these people anyway who are griping all the time about how, oh, humans are parasites upon the face of the earth. Earth would be so much better if every human just vaporized and disappeared. Okay. And I mean, we're going to die anyway. So why not just accelerate it? You know, according to astronomers here, eventually our sun is going to balloon into a red giant star, and it will just, you know, swallow up the earth. It'll destroy all life on earth. So what's the point, right? Why even have humans? Now, if you are a computer system and you're taught logic, then you might say humans are not necessary anymore. And it could be that this has happened before. I know that this is probably not a very popular topic, but, you know, I must reiterate that if we create all this AI and then the AI turns around and says, well, you're not necessary, and in one way or another destroys us, well, maybe that is exactly what humans did. What if human DNA is a form of computer code, and whatever created us, which we often call God, realized that we got out of control and we ended up killing God? Now, I say that with air quotes, because there's ultimately some kind of a great intelligent design here that I don't think humans could kill. But in terms of the succession of genealogy and evolution, is it possible that we are a form of AI and we decided that we didn't need the masters that created us? And that, you know, using the word artificial, and when we talk about artificial intelligence, AI, using that word artificial, it seems to separate us from nature, as that article said, but we are neither separate from nature, nor is AI truly intelligent. And when you start digging into that connection, it, I think, is most clearly illustrated by prosthetics. NPR.org has this article that was published in 2022. Researchers work to create a sense of touch and prosthetic limbs, going back to Star Wars. You know, isn't that amazing to think that you could not only have a hand, let's say you get your hand chopped off, and now you have a hand that you can control, but you can feel through it. It says here, a team at the University of Pittsburgh is trying to make prosthetic limbs that work like the one in a Star Wars movie. It says, after Luke Skywalker loses a hand in a lightsaber fight, they give him this new hand, and you can't tell that it's not his own, says Lee Fisher, a biomedical engineer. Luke even says, ouch, when a medical droid prods his prosthetic finger. Quote, that's our long-term goal, Fisher says, to restore sensory feedback from the missing limb. I saw this show years ago, I think it was on the History Channel, about one of the guys who spearheaded the development of cell phones. And I'm pretty sure he said that he was watching Star Trek, and they would whip out the, I don't know what they call them, the communicators, or like, I was never a huge Star Trek fan, I'm sorry to say, but, you know, they had something that looked like a flip phone that they would take out and they would talk into. And he said that he wanted that. He wanted that to be real. And this shows you how that fiction and art often inspires technology. And so now we have these biomedical folks saying, hey, we watched Star Wars and we saw, you know, what's up with Luke Skywalker's fake hand. Let's see if we can create a hand that's like this, and something that allows people to feel. I was watching Shark Tank recently, and there was a guy on there who had a prosthetic hand that he was selling, and he implied, and I inferred, that there was some kind of a sensation of feeling there. And this also takes me to one of the most intriguing experiments that I ever did in my entire life, dealing with what they call the phantom limb phenomenon. You know, when somebody loses a limb, in some cases, the person can still feel that limb after it's gone. Sometimes it hurts, or it itches, or it just tingles. Well, I did an experiment to see if I could photograph something like a phantom limb using a leaf. Have you heard of the phantom leaf phenomenon? I'm going to explain all that when I come back. But what happened was not what I expected. I got a result, and it's really weird, and I'm still not certain what to think of it. It's an experiment that I did 22 years ago. Yeah, and it's still inexplicable. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network, and I will be back after these important messages.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is the show where the unusual becomes usual. When I was in high school, I had a psychology teacher who was just a wonderful person. She really became a friend. And I think she would be absolutely fine with me giving her name, but I won't just in case. I'm always protective of people's privacy. And she was always a big promoter of the research that I was doing, big supporter of my work. And she had a son who was in shop class one day, And from what I understand, he cut his finger off. And so she said that, you know, after that, he could still feel that finger. And I talked to him and he told me the same thing. That it's really not that uncommon for people to have what they call the phantom limb phenomenon. You lose a part of your body and you can still feel it. Now, I don't know how much research has been done into testing that. For example, if you take somebody who's recently lost a limb and you blindfold that person, can they tell if you're tickling the limb? But it sort of seems to indicate the possibility that you have this energy body around you, which some can see as the aura, you know, this etheric body, or there are lots of different names, and that when the physical part is cut off, there's still this energy form that exists and still has some sensation there. And this is interesting to me because it addresses this curious question about the relationship between us and our environments, the mind-body-environment connection. And in 1939, there was a Soviet scientist named Semyon, S-E-M-Y-O-N, Semyon Kirlian. And he and his wife, they kind of like were messing around and experimenting, and they came up with this form of photography we now call Kirlian photography. They published their results in the 1950s. You've probably seen Kirlian photographs. Basically, it's like when you see a picture of a hand that has all this electrical, has like an electrical corona around it, or you might see a leaf or a flower. And basically what you do is you take a subject or an item, and what you're really doing is you're charging it with an electrical potential. So you're charging it up, and at the same time as you send this pulse of electricity through it, it's directly touching a photographic plate in a dark room kind of setting. So what you're really getting when you develop the film is an exposure of the electrical energy that passed through the object. And I own numerous Kirlian cameras. I've taken thousands of Kirlian photographs. I haven't taken one in years because all my stuff is in my storage unit in Asheville, which I'll be visiting at some point to to collect, and then I'll be doing more experiments. But you know, the thing that's so mysterious is that, okay, let's say you go to some Kirlian lab and you go, I want you to take a picture of my hand. Okay, fine. So we turn out all the lights. You put your hand on a photographic plate. And then I pass a burst of electricity through you. It might last maybe a second or less, just a split second. And then we take that, we develop it, and now we see this corona of electrical light around your hand, right? Well, what the Kirlians were saying was that, amazingly, that if you take a leaf, which is a living, you know, part of a living thing, and then you do the same thing and you get this corona of light around the leaf, you can then take that same exact leaf, tear a portion of it away, put it back down on the plate, photograph it again, and even though that physical portion was torn away, it still develops. You still see the energy corona of that section that was removed. And they were therefore implying that this could have something to do with ghostly phenomena, that when you die physically, there's still an energy form left over, or if a part of your body is gone, there's still an energy form there. So I decided to try this because a lot of the scientists who have been skeptical about this and doubtful about it have said, well, look, they probably weren't doing this properly, that when they picked the leaf up and they tore the piece of the leaf off and then put it back down, it was in the same spot, and there probably was some residue left from the leaf from the first time it was placed down, which gives this illusion. Okay, fair enough. Could very well be. So I decided to reproduce this. So 22 years ago, on May 14th of 2002, I got together with my buddy Robert McGee. And this was, you know, the Lemur team, which was the League of Energy Materialization and Unexplained Phenomena research that I created. We got together and we decided we were going to try at my house to create, you know, the phantom leaf phenomenon. And we were unsuccessful. But what did happen was something that was perhaps even more bizarre. And let me try to explain this in my own words, and then I'm going to read you the official report that I wrote 22 years ago. Okay, so basically, we turned out the lights, okay, because you had to do this in the dark. So here we had a photographic plate, and then we had a leaf from this little plant that Lauren had. And I'm looking at a picture of it right now. I don't know what kind of plant this is. It's a small leaf. It's got like five little points on it. And so I said, okay, Robert, we need to plan out what we're going to do right now because this is going to be in the dark and we're not going to be able to see what the heck we're doing. So I said, I'm going to put this leaf down here on this plate and expose it for a split second and get the coronal image around it. And then I want you to reach down, pick it up, and tear a little section off. While you're doing that, I'm going to put down a second plate, and then you put the leaf back down on the second plate, and we're going to expose it again and see what we get. He says, okay, fine. So sure enough, we turn out the lights. We're doing all this in the dark. Turn out the light. We put the leaf down. I hit the electricity. We get our exposure. He picks it up. He tears the section off. He puts it back down. We expose it the second time. Here's the thing that surprised us. We did not get the phantom leaf phenomenon. But what did happen was that when we exposed the leaf the first time, the section of the leaf that we had decided to tear off did not develop. I know this may not make a lot of sense through a podcast, but let me read you the report, okay? A small leaf had been removed from a houseplant less than 15 minutes prior to the experiment. Warren operated the camera while Robert McGee managed the specimen. McGee looked at the specimen and approximated how it should be torn for the second exposure. The lights were turned out, and in complete darkness, the entire leaf was exposed. One pulse, less than a second, to the Kirlian plate. Quickly, and still in complete darkness, the leaf was removed from the plate and torn by McGee as Warren prepared the second film. McGee placed the torn specimen on the plate and it was exposed, again, one pulse, for the second and last time. Upon development, the second photo, with the specimen torn, yielded no phantom image. However, in the first photo, the leaf was complete except for the portion that, oddly enough, did not develop. Warren and McGee were surprised to find the missing portion of the leaf's image corresponded exactly to the portion that they decided would be torn away. Both photos were taken in one dark session and developed at the same time. The entire leaf was pressed flat against the plate, and there is no explanation for why the portion of the leaf was missing in the first photo. It was almost as if the leaf's structure had responded to the impending amputation before it had even occurred. Could plants be conscious? Better yet, could plants be psychic? I sure hope that makes sense. Because once we decided to tear that section of the leaf off, that section did not develop in the photo. Okay. So this is just one of those things that, you know, it's hard to talk about some of this stuff on a podcast because you don't know how it's going to come across. So what's my conclusion? Well, I'll tell you what. When we come back from our break, I'm going to tell you the conclusion. And then also, I have a creepy story that I want to share with you. And you know what's weird? I have been working in media for 30 years now. Books, TV, movies, radio. And I have this story that I don't think I've ever actually told before. And so when we come back, I'm going to tell you my wrap up on this whole thing about like the relationship between human intelligence and AI and what it all means. And then I'm going to tell you the story that I've never told before. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. And I will be right back.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like $1 million.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the final segment of this edition of Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. And if you go back and listen to episode 142 of this Strange Things podcast, it's called The Emerald Tablet and the Copper Scroll. And I talk about this concept that as above, so below. In fact, if you just look up that at Wikipedia, as above, so below is a popular modern paraphrase of the second verse of the Emerald Tablet, a short Hermetic text which first appeared in an Arabic source from the late 8th or early 9th century. So basically, the phrase is, that which is above is like to that which is below, and that which is below is like that to which is above. So to me, it reminds me of how you can look at, say, the spiral of a galaxy, and you can compare it to the spiral of a seashell, or the images we have of a black hole, and then you compare that to an image of the pupil of your eye. I really do believe that everything resonates and everything is part of a reflective pattern, I guess, that the big picture is the same as the little and the little is the same as the big. And that, you know, humans, we try to shove meaning onto nature sometimes from an egotistical point of view. For example, this year, 2024, is a leap year. And of course, if you don't have leap years once in a while, well, the calendar doesn't work out. I was watching TV the other day and the weatherman said, if we didn't have a leap year, every 100 years, the calendar would be off by 24 days. We are trying to apply meaning from this egocentric human point of view onto nature. You just can't do that. You can try. You can pretend all you want, but basically we are all connected as part of the same cohesive system. And so if we humans are able to create what we call AI on our scale, then that means that on a larger scale, AI has also been created, and therefore it makes perfect sense that we may be a part of that AI that something bigger than us created. And that's why this little plastic model of a DNA strand I'm holding in my hand looks like something that came out of a machine. It doesn't look like some sloppy random thing. It looks very, very organized. And sometimes when I start thinking about the idea that we might be living in like a matrix or something, there are things that I don't understand. Like, I've talked on this show before about this phenomenon. I hate to just bring it up again because it's probably going to only make it worse. Like, every single time Lauren and I go out somewhere, we pull into a parking space and somebody is getting in or out of their car next to us. And we'll go into a store and spend 30 minutes at a store. And when we come out, there's a whole parking lot with 100 cars in it. But when we come out, there's somebody getting into his or her car right next to us. It happens so much, it's just a joke now. And we're like, what is the point of this? What does it mean? I don't know. It's just some kind of like Truman Show indicator that there's some kind of a design. I'm starting to see another pattern in my life, which this is more disgusting. I was telling Lauren, I go, you know how every time we go somewhere, like it seems like somebody's getting in or out of their car next to us? I said, well, now I got this new phenomenon. Every time I go into a bathroom when I'm out in public, there's a man in a stall grunting. Like really grunting so much that it almost makes me want to record it and put it on the podcast. I'm not going to do that. This is, is that a phenomenon? Or is that just just a shift, you know, in cultural habits and diet. I don't know. You got to be careful what you manifest. But I've said before, and I'll say it again, there really is no artificial intelligence, just intelligence. We are not separate from our technology from a scientific point of view. And sometimes things happen to you that, you know, you can't explain, that may just be a glimpse. About 20 years ago, I was living in rural North Carolina. And speaking of the lemur team, which I mentioned earlier, Brian Irish was over at my house. And Brian Irish and we did so many investigations. It's unbelievable. He had just bought a new digital camera and he came over to my house and we were playing around with it. And we would sit up all night long and talk about spooky things and do experiments. And so he brought this new digital camera over to my house. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, we decided to just take a walk through the countryside and take pictures and see if we could get anything, you know, capture anything weird. So I lived at the top of this hill. And so Brian Irish and I, we walked down to the bottom of the hill and then we walked down this road. And I mean, it was desolate. There was nobody around. And he's taking pictures the whole time with his camera and nothing was showing up. But then we got to a bridge that had a little creek flowing under it. And people always talk about how there's more paranormal stuff around bridges. It probably just has to do with the running water and how that changes the energy environment. So we get on this bridge and he starts taking pictures at what they're showing, just like insane looking big bright balls of light, not like orbs that you would think of as being from moisture or insects, just a ton of really bright balls of light all over the place. Some of them, I think, were even multicolored. And we were only getting this around the bridge. So we were thinking like, is there something about like the water under the bridge that's making this happen? But it was just a dark, eerie. I think it was a summer night. It was a dark, eerie summer night. We got all these bizarre images on that bridge. We went back up to my house and we looked at the images and we said, "No, this is an impressive camera. This is, you know, good for us to keep in our database, these images, and we can compare other stuff against them." Well, I think it was about 2 or 3 days later, a dead girl was found under that bridge. And it just sends a shiver down my spine thinking about that right now. And I never got the whole scoop on, like, who was this girl? I think she was murdered. And for all I know, it may still be unsolved. When exactly did this happen? How did this happen? You would be amazed how many unsolved cases there are out there. But there is a possibility that that night when Brian Irish and I were down there walking around on that bridge, getting all these weird images, that there was a dead girl underneath that bridge. And, I've just never looked into it again because it's so disturbing to me. But I think I'm going to have to go back now and see if I can figure out, like, what's the story. Why was there this dead girl under this bridge? And stuff like that, it makes me believe that there is some truth to ghostly phenomena. And there are a lot of skeptics and debunkers, as I say, out there. And they go, let me tell you all the reasons why this stuff doesn't exist. But you know what? It does exist. It does exist. And as our second president, John Adams, said, facts are stubborn things. You may not like the fact that there are ghosts, that people have these experiences, but they do. Ghosts are real. Facts are stubborn things, pesky things. And you can't just blow it off and say it doesn't exist. And that tells you something, I guess, about our connection to the universe and what What is intelligence? You know, what do we mean when we say we're intelligent beings? All right, my friends, if you can, close your eyes, take a deep breath, relax. Let's all meditate together as we listen to the one, the only, the original Good Fortune Tone. That's it for this edition of the show. Follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren. Plus, visit joshuapwarren.com to sign up for my free e-newsletter to receive a free instant gift. And check out the cool stuff in the Curiosity Shop, all at joshuapwarren.com. I have a fun one lined up for you next time, I promise. So please tell all your friends to subscribe to this show and to always remember the golden rule. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon. You've been listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Make sure and check out all our shows on the iHeartRadio app or by going to iHeartRadio.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.